Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. Part two of our discussion with Brian Bush. Look, there's lots of stuff in here about playing overseas. I think one of the big things that those of us who play there know is, one, there's guys you've never heard of that get better. Two, the culture is very different. Three, every country, they ask the Americans to play a little bit differently. The style itself is different. There's just so many parts to it which are really interesting. You know, so many parts to it which are interesting. But I thought you'd appreciate this because this is really how it works in terms of how many different teams you're going to play on, the feeling of it, and how very, very difficult it is for people to get a feeling and feel like they belong when sometimes you show up and the coach doesn't even want you, somebody else wants you, or somebody else becomes available. All right, take a listen to part two, the tales of travel and non-NBA basketball with me and Brian Butch.
So we pretty much covered the college thing, right?
Yeah.
You go what, summer league with the Grizzlies?
Summer leagues with the Grizzlies for, and that situation just wasn't a good situation, right? Coming out of college, summer league, you want to play. I didn't play a whole lot, so I didn't have a lot of opportunities to do what I, you know, what you're supposed to do in summer league. I signed with an agent that I kind of knew a little bit, had a relationship, trusted.
Let's have this discussion because I don't think people, and what I don't know how to be construed because I don't know if there's ever been a discussion by two people like us who went through this process.
Yeah.
Like, I can really kind of help you, but I don't want to, I'm not trying to talk shit about an agent, right? Okay. So you're playing your senior year at Wisconsin. At what point did you have an agent discussion? Cause I remember a little bit where mine was. So when did you, not till you're done playing, while you're playing?
Yeah, well, I was done playing. There was a guy that was doing some TV stuff that would come out to games as TV, and then he turned himself into an agent, and then we started having conversations. I interviewed five agents after school just to try to get a feel. Do you ever trust an agent? I mean, the answer to that is no. Like, I never did. I just never had a great – the guy I was with the longest, there was a lot of conversations where I had to say, dude, be real with me. Like, I don't need – you don't – I'm not a guy you need to sugarcoat stuff with. Like, you just need to be honest with me. Where some guys, I understand you need to do that. Like, you didn't need to tell me if I was good or not. The contract was going to speak if I was good or not. Like, if I got enough money to play, I was going to, okay, I'm good. But so the first agent I was with, I went, you know, it just, kind of, I felt comfortable with him. I had known him for a while.
Who is this?
Go ahead.
No, who has his name?
Oh, his name was Scott Alexander. Like I said, I still talk with Scott a good amount. It just, you know, with who he surrounded himself with and what he was built on and being new in the industry, it was one of those things that I said, okay, I'll trust you. We'll see how everything else. He was working on building a whole bunch of other people around him too. And it just didn't work out. Like, I actually was looking through the emails because there was after summer league, I thought I had a great deal in Spain. I got over to Spain. And I get pulled into the coach's office, the general manager's office, say, yeah, this is a tryout. I said, hold up, a tryout? I'm not doing a tryout. Like, you can get me on a plane back home. My agent at that time, Scott and his group, never told me it was a tryout.
Of course not. Oh, I flew to Russia, same
yeah.
thing.
Like, same and thing. I said, I'm sorry, guys, I'm good enough not to have a tryout. Like, I'm a first team all Big Ten selection. I'm not doing a tryout. Like, you're going to make a commitment. We're going to – even my first year out, I said, this is what it is. But I knew you can't do that. Like, you got to have some skin in the game. I was big on that. So that's how it came out. But in summer league, I thought, great, I'll get a great opportunity, a big that can shoot, I can play. I got a call last minute saying, hey, we got you on Memphis's summer league team. Literally, I was working out at Appleton West, the high school I went to, got a call. Had to run home, pack a bag, fly to Memphis that day.
Well, why Memphis? Why not a team you were going to – why, I guess
– thank you. I said thank you right at that point. As a young player, I put all the trust in the agent, which was my fault. Like, I needed to do some more research and figure out where
how are you going to know at 22 years old, 23 years old?
For sure, right? Now
looking – like, look, I mean, you know, my, so – a guy named Bill McCandless from Inner Performances. Like, he was on me for a long time.
Yep.
And but he had a bunch of people who knew my dad, reached out to him. And we talked to some other people that, you know, in hindsight, probably would have been better. Like, you try and find a guy who represents, do you find a guy who represents people like you?
Yes.
Right? Players like you, like, oh, well, he's the point guard agent. Or do you find guys that have nobody like you, so you're the one point guard that he calls about, right? So McCandless was with the guy Herb Berdoy, and Herb was like the biggest, Inner Performances was the biggest in Europe. And my guess was that my plan was I was going to go and play in Europe, come back summer league, maybe 2 or 3 years, and then really have a shot. And the there's a bunch of interesting things. When I came out, I played in the USBL. I didn't do the workouts. And I do think that was sound logic at the time, because he was like, are you going to look better in one-on-one games and three-on-three games or in five-on-five? And I've always been I'm a five-on-five guy, right? Yep. Like, if you see me one-on-none in a gym, I do very little for your eyes, you know, other than I'm a pretty athletic white kid, right? But if you see me five-on-five, that's, so I played in the USBL, which was good. And people did come to the games to scout, like we're legit NBA people, but I didn't feel like it was, I would have liked to have flown out and done a couple of workouts here or there. So then that year in summer league, that was back when they had it in Long Beach.
Yep.
And they would have the pro teams, but they'd also have like the free agent teams as well. So my dad actually put together a free agent team, and I hooped there. It was fun. And then this was the year that they established the Bozeman A and the Bozeman Bs, and I could actually be an Israeli and be a Bozeman B. But I mean, here's how bad like the agent communication thing is. So we get married, and I flew to Chicago just to meet Herb Berdoy for the first time. And Herb Berdoy's like claim to fame was like he was Tony Kukoc's agent, right? He was the one who discovered Tony Kukoc. So literally like this, like 3 days after I'm married, we hadn't planned a honeymoon because I was going to play on this team in Russia. And it was such a boondoggle because they're the Bozeman A, Bozeman B, Herb Berdoy and Inter Performances had their own team in this new little Euro League. And the idea was, hey, we'll play for the first 5 months or whatever. And then when you advance to the next round of the playoffs, we won't necessarily be good enough. Everybody will get sold off to different teams. So it'll just basically be a showcase. You'll get paid, you know, but you're not going to get paid top of the market. You'll get paid. Anyway, so I go there. So first we're having dinner. This again, 2 days after we married, went to a Cubs game first night. And then we go to have this beautiful dinner with Herb Berdoy in Chicago. He's like, hey, I got good news for you guys. I got good news. I got bad news. I was like, all right, what's the bad news? Bad news is there's no spouses or girlfriends at training camp in Varese, Italy. Right. And we were like, just got married. We're going to Varese. Yes. That's where I was going to do training camp and hang out. And then ultimately we'll go to train there and play in Russia. Okay. What's the good news? Well, the good news is you got 2 weeks, we push back training camp because the Olympics are going on. So you got 2 weeks to go have a honeymoon. Like, Herb, I don't have any fucking money.
I was going to say.
I have $0. Like, I have literally $0.
Yeah.
Whatever people gave us when we got married, that's it. That's like literally that's my bank account. So we like, all right, had another nice night in Chicago and flew back to Oklahoma. And I, for a week, I worked on a construction crew to build a wall across the street from her, the high school she went to. And I remember saying to myself, I work out in the morning, I work. And then I went up to Oklahoma State and played at night. And I remember saying to myself on the drive back from Oklahoma State, like looking at my hands more, I was like, I'm never doing manual labor ever again. That's real man's work. I'm not a real man. And then I finally go to this team and the training camp's awesome. And I have a Yugoslavian coach, and Yugoslavian coaches don't like small point guards, right? And there's already an American point guard named Keith Mr. Jennings, who's another small point guard, but he played in the NBA. So the one asterisk is they don't like small point guards unless you play in the NBA. Uh-huh. And they really like small point guards, right? And I'm supposed to go. We trained for a couple weeks. Then I flew back to the Lakers. They had a mini camp. And again, this is not my agent. This is like more my dad and his relationship with Tex Winter. I got to go to this mini camp. Didn't get invited to vet camp. Fly back to this team. Practice with, you know, working out. Go to Israel. And this is the kicker. This is where, like, you know, you're at agents that suck. So I'm Jewish. And for people who don't understand, you're allowed, if you're Jewish, to go through Aliyah, which is like, it's like a birthright. You would be automatically be a citizen in Israel. Everyone who's Jewish is told this, right? Like, and you, they actually give you a free trip. If you live there, they'll give you free housing for a while. Like, they recruit like no other, right? They're unbelievable Roy Williams type of recruiters. So, so they're like, okay, you got to go to Tel Aviv. We'll meet you at the airport, take you to, you know, get your citizenship. Then the next day you'll fly back. You have dinner with this Israeli agent after you, you. So I bring like some hoop shoes, some other stuff. I'm for like a 2-day trip. So I get off the plane, guy's totally nice, get a cup of coffee, go, we go to immigration or whatever it's called. And I get to the front of the line and you're supposed to write down like where you live. And I was like, I wrote down this hotel in France. I was like, oh no, hotel in Italy where I'm living. So I get to the front and they look through your documents, your bar mitzvah, whatever, may prove you're Jewish. And where do you live? And I was like, well, I live in Italy. I'm a basketball player. I mean, I was just honest with all my, you cannot claim Aliyah unless you live in Israel for 1 year. I was like, what? So I walk out of this thing and I was just like, hey, dude, what the fuck? It's like, oh, you must say you live in Israel. Like, you know, that information.
Like, would have been helpful.
Very, very useful. About 25 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I was like, and maybe an address, some documentation.
Just something. Yeah.
So
how about this?
Hold on. Okay. So flew from Milano to Tel Aviv. Not a crazy long flight, but I think it was several hours. Yeah. I go and I do this thing and I had just a cup of coffee. Like that's literally all I'd had all day. And now I walk out like, oh shit, I'm not going to be an Israeli citizen. So like, no problem. We'll get you a job in Israel. So literally they're like yelling, you know, you've been to the Middle East.
Yes. And,
okay. So for anybody who hasn't been to, and I think most of Europe is this way, but especially once you get to the Mediterranean areas, when you get to Greece,
yep.
Turkey, Israel, and anything on, you know, anything right there in the Gulf. A day is not a day without an argument. Right. Like you, I coached in Israel and I told these guys, hey, it's like, fellas, listen, a day is not a day without an argument. Like, what do you mean? I was like, we'll get on the first team bus we get on, the drivers will start arguing for no reason. I don't know if they're arguing or talking loud. I can't understand anymore. So we sit down and say things. So I take that with, this is me in 2001. No, this is in 2000. So in 2000, and they're yelling at each other on the phone. I don't know who screwed up, right? And Matan Amir, I think, was the guy's name. So they take me to Ashdod for a practice. And they're like, we stopped and got like a shawarma and a freaking Coke, right? You grew up in the Midwest, so I don't know if they did this, but like, you know, like if you grew up, my dad used to take me to play in New York City. We're playing out like that's the a slice of pizza and a Coke,
yeah.
Or a hot dog and a Coke in the States is a shawarma and a Coke and go play basketball. So I'm like, how much does it pay to be an Israeli this year in Israel? Because I'm, you know, Mike, like my whole calculation over how much money I'm going to make is changing. All my stuff's in Italy. Do I even go? I don't even know how this all works.
Right.
And I got some putts who forgot to tell me that I needed to lie and say I lived in Israel like 30 minutes ago, right? So I went and played and I was miserable. And I don't know if I was good or I was bad. I just remember riding back and end up staying with my friend Miles Simon, who was playing Rinana for a couple of days. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, God, this is a bad way for my career to end before it like ever
starts.
Right. And a lot of it is the agent, right? Like, yeah. Like all of this shit should have been, I signed with a guy who had a set up deal, but they didn't fully yet. They all just like, okay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
So, like, the Memphis thing, for people to understand, is, like, you got to find not just a team that wants you, but a team that says, hey, we're going to play you, and we're going to play you in a way in which you can be successful. Yep. If you have a number of teams that are interested.
Yep. Exactly. And they were like, oh, Memphis would be great for you. We'll get it done. And like, it was such a horrendous situation for me to be in. And then it sent me back. And like a lot of guys, they think, oh, I made it to Summer League. I made it to the NBA. You didn't do anything. Like, they let everybody play in Summer League. Like, that Summer League is. It's like, I hate these guys that get on Instagram and Twitter and everything. Look, and I made it. You didn't do anything. It's Summer League, man. Anybody can hoop in Summer League. Like, if you got a connection, you're going to hoop in Summer League too. Like, right. That's just – like, that's Summer League. So –
A lot of favors.
And so I knew that, but the situation wasn't good. They sent me to Spain on a tryout. I fired them while I was still in Spain because I said, this isn't good. Like, I was looking – before I jumped on, I was looking through the emails. I have the email that said, I'm firing you. This is done. You didn't pick up your phone call, so we are done. Like, this is kibosh. This is over with.
Right.
And thankfully for me, it worked out where it was only that one time. I signed a new agent. He was the agent I stuck with throughout. Then Keith Kreider out of Chicago Edge Sports. He got me a gig right away in China that year. I was only there about 6 weeks. Jason Robidoux, was my coach there. He's no longer alive. That's how crazy it is. I believe he was UTEP guy. I know he was a Marquette assistant for a little bit.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think it was with Calvin. Yeah, I think so. Exactly.
Yep. Kelvin Sampson, yeah.
Yes.
Raslin Hard, yeah.
Oh, that was crazy. That was – and for me, I was still playing Wisconsin basketball, college basketball in China. And if you know anything about China –
So what – I don't know anything about you playing in China. Okay, so – Give me the visual. You fly from where to go to Chicago?
I fly from Appleton to Chicago to China to Beijing and then Beijing to Jinxi.
Okay, wait, non-stop Chicago to Beijing.
Non-stop, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're 23 years old?
Yeah, 23, I think. Yep.
You're 23.
So
first class?
No. No. I learned that on the way back.
I understand. Like, people don't understand. People think foreign basketball always first class. Like, the fight over business class and first class and coach is brutal, right? And
brutal.
I can fit into an overhead compartment. You cannot. You're on a plane to Beijing, China.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How long is the flight?
I believe it was 13 or 14.
That's rough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you fly there. You're in coach. You land.
Land.
You stay in Beijing. Okay. You walk out. Like, what do you remember about the airport?
Yeah, I know. So I'm Beijing and I'm still there. Then I fly to Jingsu. So I got one more flight to get to Jingsu.
Is it the same airport? Because like when I did Russia, you go to one airport, they pick you up, and then they take you to a different airport.
No,
and,
same airport. So I was
and,
able
and there's to walk. A, there's a moment in that drive where you're thinking to yourself, there's a lot of places he could dump me.
No question.
So you land and you're in how hard? Like, I mean, I don't know how worldly you are. 23. How hard? Okay, Jinzhou. You have to same airport. It looks like an American airport. Like, I don't
looks
know.
Looks like an American airport. You know, it's not, but it's different. So the team picks you up. The translator's there. Eagle, the translator's there. Jace Rabu came to pick me up because I think he knew I didn't know. So at least there was another American there. The first, he goes, "Hey, you hungry?" I said, "Yeah, let's go. You know, wherever I'm open. Hey, let's hit up this KFC." So I'm not kidding. After all of this, we stop in a KFC in China to make this one. Like, that's the first meal I have. And so that's what we do. They take me to the hotel. I sleep for about 2 hours, and then we go to practice right away. And it's me and former Florida player Darnell Hardy. Right, those are the two Americans, because you only get two Americans in China.
He was on the team that beat me my last game in the Elite Eight.
Exactly. So
shot fake, go left, and he's punching it.
That's right. But he had made a career in China. Like, they loved everything about him. Yeah. I came in to replace a guy, but at that point, like,
so who's the guy you came to replace?
Don't even know his name. Don't even he was long gone. They said, "Hey, we need somebody now." They said, "Get on a plane and go." I said, "Well, how much is the cash?" They paid me $30,000, which for a 23-year-old for a month was like, done.
Let's go.
Like, let's go. So I was like, I'm on. Let's do this. But in China, everyone sees these numbers of these guys over there scoring 60, 70, 80. You know, but that's because that's what you're asked to do. Literally, you take every shot. You don't guard the other American. And you just go get buckets. Like, there's no, like, you're not trying to play defense against each other. You just know that your job is to score and their job is to score. And you just go get buckets. Like, 20 points, 20 rebound games, those aren't that good. Like, I had 20 and 13. And literally after two games there, being there 6 weeks, we only played two games. It was the start of the season. That night, after the second game, there was a plane ticket on my bed. We were on the road. There was a plane ticket on my bed back to Jingsu. They said, "You're done." Like, that was it. That was it.
Two games.
That was it.
But you got your 30 grand?
Yep.
Okay.
It was go get your money, back alley, go into some back room. Like, you talk about thinking it was time to get your career, your life might be done type stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember, so our first big game we played when I was in Russia, we won the championship with, it's called Euro Great, but we played in Moscow and we beat CSKA.
Oh, yeah.
And we got back and we had a team meeting, and in walks the team president, and he's got the handcuffed briefcase, and then he's got two goons with him, and he opens the briefcase, and the player of the game got $5,000 cash. Every other dude that played decent minutes got $3,000. And then dudes that did nothing got like $1,000. But like, okay, that's Moscow, incredibly expensive. But where we live, not incredibly expensive. So like, when I remember that $3,000 I got, like, I think that lasted me almost the entire time I was there. Like, I literally like, "Hey, we don't need to draw any cash. Like, here's our cash the rest of the time." And we won the championship, and they had like a victory parade, but they had given out so many cash bonuses that, like, we don't have, I think it was like a 25 or 30 grand cash bonus. And they were like, "All we have is 18,000. And it was the end of June, and Summer League was like starting like in 2 days. And I had a spot in the Lakers Summer League, because anybody plays Summer League. And I'm like, "Fuck, I got to go." They're like, "If you wait, stay, celebrate." I was like, "No, I'm out." So one, we put the extra cash in our shoes, right? Because when you get to Moscow, they want taxes, right? Put in your shoes. And then two, they were like, "Don't leave. You won't get the rest of your cash. You'll never see it. Kiss that fucking money goodbye." And you know what? I got all my money from
your really? Family.
Yes. I it was like 2 weeks later, and all of a sudden I like, you know, got like $200 out or something. And I looked and was like, "Where else money come from?"
Yeah.
And then I called the bank. They're like, "You got a wire from something in Russia." I was like, "Oh my God." So yes, it's okay. So you get to Jinzhou, you're going home. Now you fly again back to Beijing, and then all the way home.
Okay.
So this is still fall after your
after my first year out of college, still fall.
So then what?
Then I end up going to Germany, and I play for a small team called Nördlingen. I actually went to Bremerhaven, and at this point it was December. It was November, right before Thanksgiving. I had a tryout for Bremerhaven. At this point,
well, I thought you didn't do tryouts. I don't do tryouts.
Yeah, well, in November, not having a job, I sure did. Uh-huh. It changed real quick because you're like, okay, I need tryouts. Something.
How much?
Like,
I do tryouts. I'll do that. Exactly. We'll just do stance and react the whole time.
That's what it was. So I go to Bremerhaven knowing that I've got another team that's interested as well. So yeah. I got two teams in Germany. So I can kind of I pick and choose a little bit. So I knew like, all right, I'll go to Bremerhaven first. I don't know if it's going to work out. Like it's way up north in Germany. It's freezing cold. The team sucks. Like it's bad. It's
Buddy,
bad.
Hold on. He grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin. Stop with the weather. Oh, my God. The weather is terrible.
Like, this was different. Like,
every day of my life.
This was different, though. Like, it just was – I walked down. I was like, this is not a good place at all. So I got on a train, went down to this small town in Nerdling. Like, they picked me up with the whole coaching staff. Their team picks me up. Like, they're like, we want you to be here. We want you – like, because this team – their whole thing was they wanted to stay in the top division. This had been a small team that had been in Division III, Division II. Now they finally got to the top division. Like, we just want to stay. We don't need to win a lot of games, but we just want to stay in the top. And I was like, all right. Like, and if you guys really want me that bad, let's do this. So I stayed in Nerdling. And it was a situation where, like, I loved it. Like, one of the assistant coaches, his mom was willing to teach, like, German to me. So like I'd go over to her house.
I learned Russian when I was in Russia too.
Exactly. Awesome. I'd go over to their house. She'd make dinner. I'd learn German. Like I was like, if I'm going to do it, let's do it. So like you go all in with that stuff. We had some players, not guys that anyone would know of, but just like small school guys. Danny Gibson was a little point guard. Omar, and I'm trying to forget.
Daniel Gibson played at Texas, right?
No, well, not that Danny Gibson. I mean, not that Danny Gibson. Danny Gibson from a little Division II school. But he ended up playing like 13 years over there.
No, those dudes, they like, find a niche and they get confident, they get better, and they're good.
Exactly.
And they know how to play that type of game. So who's the coach?
Andres Wagner. And he's been doing a whole bunch of different, you know, he's still coaching in Germany, but he was a young coach. And we just, I mean, like it was a bunch of guys that just played. And we ended up like, so we were bottom or we were above the team Bremerhaven. We ended up beating Bremerhaven the last game of the season. We stay in the league. I get the bonus for staying in the league and all those other things. Like it was a good fit for me. I needed it because it was a situation where like, again, I don't do tryouts. My first thing, I did tryouts to get a job. Yep. So, like, that's what it – like, it was great. And I think that's kind of – like, I learned that, like, what overseas basketball was. Like, in China, it was, like, still play college basketball. Hey, great shot, but, you know, kick it one more time. It's going to come back to you. It's not coming back to you. And guess what? They're not paying you for it to come back to you. They're paying you to go get buckets now. And I learned that in Germany. So I felt good. And then that next summer was in summer league again. This time it was with Milwaukee. And it wasn't a great setup there either because they had just drafted Joe Alexander. Like there was no playing time. I still went. I still did it. But it was one of those where I was like, this is a wasted summer. So let's go overseas again. So I ended up going to Greece. Had a good deal. Tassos is the owner. The guy's name was Tassos, and I'll always remember it because the owner was shady as could be.
They're all shady,
right? Like, so I get to Greece. There's no internet. There's nothing. There's a whole holiday. Like, there's the whole month of August is a holiday.
Yeah,
the whole month holiday. So I got no internet. I got nothing. I'm over there just trying to figure this thing out, trying to understand what it is. Our coach doesn't speak any English. We got an assistant coach that somewhat spoke English. And I'll remember this to this day because I left in November. It was me, Brent Petway, former Michigan guy.
Sure.
And they brought back, oh my goodness, they brought a dude from Illinois in to replace me. And I had gone 20-20. I had three double-doubles in a row. But the reason they were replacing me is they couldn't pay me. So I was not getting any of my money. So this was, it was coming to a head. Now, during this time, like, this club didn't have a lot of money. We had practice one time in the gym, the roof was leaking and they put buckets on the floor. And then they said, well, just practice around the buckets. Like, don't worry about them. Like, go 5-on-5, but don't worry about them. Like, just don't knock them down, because then we got to stop practice and clean up the floor. And I'm coming from Big Ten, Kohl Center, like, that's what you expect. And then you go overseas and it's like, you want me to practice around the buckets? Like,
that's why dudes can't make it, though.
Exactly.
They right? can't make it.
Exactly.
When you start hanging your shit on a hook.
Yep.
Right. And you've been in these college locker rooms, you're like, what am I doing here?
Yep.
You know, what am I doing here?
So here's the kicker with all of this, right? So I'm doing all of this. I realize that we're going our own ways, but I need to get my money. Because if I don't get my money, I'm not coming home with it. Like, I literally, so they let me go, and I'm forgetting, Carter was the guy from Illinois. We had played against each other. He came to replace me. I bought a ticket to go to the game in Greece. So they had released me. I bought a ticket to go watch the game. And I acted like I was part of the team at halftime because the owner was there in the locker room. I walked in with the team with street clothes. And I said, bought a ticket so I could get into the game because I needed to see the owner, because the owner was dodging me, man. Like, I'd go to his office. Oh, he's not here. Tasso's not here. What do you mean Tasso's not here? Right here's Tasso's car. You mean Tasso's isn't here? Like, he's right here. Like, I know he's – no, here. Okay. All right, so I buy a ticket. I go in the locker room. Tasso's is there. My man becomes white as a ghost. And I said, give me my bleeping money. I said, I'm done playing games. Give me my money. In front of the locker room, the coach, the players. Now, the Americans, Petway, these guys, they're just laughing because, like, they know what
it's Greece.
It is.
It's Greece.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're laughing. I'm like, that's fine. I'm getting something from you. I'm getting my money before I leave. Like,
what happened?
So I got my money. I got on the plane and left. The next then 2 days, I had my money, and I was out the door.
That's hysterical. Did you get hooked on that Nescafe when you're in is that what they do in Greece, where they whip up the instant Nescafe and they whip it up and put a bunch of sugar and milk in there? Did you get hooked on that?
Always. That's all we did. Have one practice. They took us to a coffee shop, Doug. Like, that was practice. Like, you know what? Coffee shop. What do you mean coffee shop? We're supposed to practice today. No, coffee shop. So we all went to a coffee shop.
I never forget. So when I was my year in Israel, I had a coach his name's Sharon Drucker. And he had coached Miles like the year before in Renana. Yeah. And Miles and him had kind of butted heads some. And, you know, they were so stupid and slow in their negotiations after 9/11 that I end up, by the time I agreed to a deal, it was like one day after the date to register. So I couldn't play the first four games, right?
Yep.
So there's a couple of different stories that are really good. I'll give you the one, though, in terms of the interaction with the coach was after, like, he's like, Gottlieb, you have very smart basketball. You come with coaching, like coaching staff, first four games. It's like, cool, right? So, you know, it sounded like the coolest thing ever, where, like, I would be in the coach's meetings and then I'd go warm up, but I couldn't play. So then at halftime, he wanted me to be in the coach's meetings. And then, you know, sometimes I'd give an opinion or whatever. And then after games, I'd go to coffee with the coaches, right? And it actually ended up being a bad thing because everyone's like, Professor Gottlieb, you know more than us. When I started playing for him, like, hey, dude, you're the one who, like, tried to make me feel like I was a coach. We just want to make you feel like a part of the team. Like, why'd you invite me to the coach's shit when you're talking shit about all the players? And then, you know, when I share my thoughts as a player, you're like, I know too much. So coaches – and I will tell you that Sharon ran one of my favorite practices because all we did was play.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all of his teaching was with him playing, which I really liked because, I mean, like, you get past the point of breakdown drills. Like, all right, you know, like, just tell me where you want me to be and tell me where you want to be. All right, what's one, what's two, what's three? We run horns? Horns twist? What are we running? Just tell me. I can figure the shit out.
Exactly.
Okay, so you get home from Greece. get home from Greece.
And that's then, when
you're like, fuck it, I'm staying stateside.
Yeah. Yo. Like, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done chasing money. I'm done with the headaches. Like, I haven't had a good experience. Like, I'm just going to try the G League, like, or the D League at this point. Like, I'm just, you know what, like, and at this point, you going to the D League was not a good thing. Like, it wasn't what it is now. Like, it was like,
yeah.
But I knew, like, I knew if I did what I was supposed to do, it set me up for a good summer league, which would then set me up for a good overseas, and then we would see what happened.
And restart it, yeah.
Exactly. Just a quick, you know, and do that. Well,
so you went to the D League in that season?
In that season, yep. So I went there right before Christmas.
Okay.
So
you go to Bakersfield.
Yeah, Bannon won a game. Will Voigt.
I know Will.
Yep. Yep.
He's a good coach. He's still doing his thing, I think, in where is he?
He's in Germany right now with Bonn. Yep. So I go there. They hadn't won a game. First game there, I hit a game winner. You would have thought that the lock, like, I did something. Like, I was like, this is what happened. Like, okay, now whatever. So, but the best thing is, so I'm glad you know Will then. So Will's a little testy at times. And I'm a little testy. Like, and so we got to the showcase. And sat down and had a great breakfast. But I told him, I said, I don't think we're doing things right. Like, and like, we just had a real coach. And he goes, you know what? You're not good enough for the NBA right now. And like, I loved it. Like, I was like, thank you. Like, cause I'm a guy that craves honesty. I want to be coach. I want, just tell me, just be real.
Yeah, like, tell me the deal. Right.
Like, yes.
I've done been this way too long for you to blow smoke on my ass.
Exactly. And after that, it clicked. Like, it clicked for me. Like, I need to rebound the basketball and I need to continue to score and do what I'm doing. But if I rebound now guys are looking at me like,
right.
All right, like, he could do something on the defense end for us, and he can stretch the floor. So, all right. So, by the time we get done playing the G League, I was the D League MVP in the All-Star game. And then I got called up by the Nuggets all within 6 months. I go from being released and fighting for money within 5 to 6 months later, signed an NBA deal with the Nuggets. Like, it was nuts. Like, it just was all because it just clicked. So, that was, to me, that was the best thing that I did at that point in my career. Then I go to Denver. I blow up my knee. I've got a rehab for 15 months. My first time I play is when I try to make the Pan America team for Team USA.
Dan Gundy, the coach?
Nope. Nate Tibbetts was the coach. So they had a
Nate as well. He was the G League coach in Tulsa, right?
Yep, exactly. Him and Dale Osborne, who they're both on Portland staff now, they were the coach for the Pan Am game. So we went down to Tulsa, got a bunch of G League guys, and we played in the Pan Am game. I made the squad. First time I played, had real live competition in 15 months with my knee. So, and then it was, we came back. And
did you guys win?
We finished third. We got together.
Who was your favorite person on that team?
We have Blake Ahorn. Who else? We have Jerome Dyson. We had a bunch. Moses Ahembe. We had a bunch of dudes that were like.
Who was your favorite person? I'm not talking about player. Who was your favorite person? Because everybody, it's like Noah's Ark. Like, everybody goes off in twos, right?
Like, you just a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Like, this was different because literally at the team center we were at, we were all in the same. Like, building. We had
what country was it in?
Guadalajara, Mexico. So we had like four guys sleeping in the same room type deal. Like, it was nuts. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was like, so you're like, what's your best person? Like, we have four guys in one room, four guys in the next room, down the hall, four guys. So like, the whole team was in two different rooms because they were two big rooms. So like we were close with everything. I say Blake Ahern probably is the guy that like we had connected with because I had played with him in Bakersfield earlier though. So like we had, you know, kind of one of those deals.
What, and then you went to, when did you go to Puerto Rico?
So I went to Puerto Rico after. So I went to, we played in that. It was the lockout year.
Yeah.
Then I went to New Orleans. So we had played, I went to Bakersfield, played two or three games in Bakersfield, and then the lockout ended. So then you went to training camp and I played. That's when I tore my MCL and patella in the other knee. Then that following year, that summer, I went to Puerto Rico then. And You talked about it. You know how it goes. You get on the flight. It was not a super long flight, but 4 or 5 hours. I'm 7 feet tall. I did get first class on this one. I learned, like, okay, let's do this. But then I get in to the airport at 5 o'clock. Tip is at 7. They've got me playing in the game.
And tell me if I'm wrong, but like those spring leagues, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, I don't know about the Philippines. I know you played there, I think.
Yep.
But those are basically like, you will literally get one game if you play shitty and they just fucking send you home. It's a short season and they're like, come in, get buckets or go home. Is that about
right? Exactly. Right. Like, so it's hilarious because I get there, I play. Second quarter, my hamstring is really tight. Like,
you can
tell here, like my body isn't the greatest. The injuries continue to go. Right? My hamstring's tight, but I'm like, I got to keep this job. I end up hitting the game winner, but the last 3 minutes, my hamstring is just throbbing. So I'm like, I get back to the apartment they threw me in. I'm icing and I'm doing all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, there's something seriously wrong here. Like, this isn't good. Sure enough, I strained my hamstring. They're like, we can't wait 2 weeks for you to get healthy. We're sending you home. So literally
one game
winner, and I'm gone. Like, and it's just like, are we doing this? Like, is this how I go? I go, okay, sounds good. I mean, this is what it was.
Okay, so you get home, then what?
Then was regroup, like try to figure out what it was. I ended up playing for the D League select team in Vegas, yeah. Summer League. Cause I was like, I'm done playing with the NBA teams. Like, give me a spot where I can show out a little bit. Like, I talked with Alex Jensen, who's the head coach of the G League team. And he's like, dude, if you come, you're going to start. Like, you're going to start and you're going to play for us. So I said, let's do it. Let's do it. Played well. Then I had the situation of, okay, do I go overseas right away or do I try one more year to get to where I was to do two different times? Like, and this is where I probably stuck around in the G League or D League too long. Like, I stuck around, I played another 4 months there, and it came to a point with Will and with everybody, I was like, what am I doing here? Like, am I going to get to the NBA or not? Because I'm now at this point 29. Like, I don't have that much more time to make that much money doing this. What am I doing? And Will asked me to take a pay cut because they wanted to bring somebody in. And a pay cut in the G League, you're only making $19,000 the way it was. I said, I'm not taking any less money. Like, it's not happening. So I said, you know what? Trade me to Fort Wayne. They traded me to Fort Wayne. I was there 3 weeks. And finally, while I was on my way to Fort Wayne, I talked to my agent. I said, listen, Keith, I said, if it's not going to happen, you need to get me out of the D League. Now, at this point, there was $25,000 or $50,000 buyout to get out of the league if you had a contract.
Right.
Which is crazy. Like, I get they were trying to build the league, but that was just stupid amount.
Right. That's why I played in the ABA back when the ABA existed. The IBA and the other thing. You had no or minimal buyout.
Yep. And Keith was able to get this deal done with the Philippines, and I headed over to the Philippines. They paid the $50,000 buyout, and they paid me a good amount of money to go over there and play. I'm over there.
What's that like? You land in the Philippines.
Loved it. Like, they love basketball. We landed there. We practiced. Had a great teammate by the name of Jared Dillinger. Well, it was like awesome. He told me like what we needed to do. We go back to this, like, they had something called Bouillotte, which is like a duck embryo. And like one of their teammates, this was one of the things like he brought in. And I said, sure, I'll do it. Like, I'll take a bite. It's knowing that, like, if I try to buy into the team and I become a good part of it, I might stick around a little bit longer. Like, I'll play good, but, like, maybe you try this too and it might work. So here's the kicker with all this. Like, this is the craziest thing I've ever been a part of. You know, they bring me in the locker room as I get off the plane for practice. The coach pulls me in. He goes, I'm taking a chance on you. You know, they wanted to bring in a couple of different players, but I took a chance on you. So let's, prove me right. I'm like, okay, let's go. So I'm playing really well. I'm 40, 30 games, you name it, like 40 points, 30 rebounds, like never happened. I'm a big that can shoot the three. Like, I've got 3-point celebrations because the fans are going crazy. Like, I'm doing it all to try to, oh yeah. It wasn't the arrow. It was this, and then it was like a chop, man. But I'm like, I gotta find a way to keep this job. So I find out through the grapevines they're bringing in Darnell Jackson from China to take my job, and I'm playing good and we're winning. Now, in the Philippines, you can only be 6'8". You can't be 6'11" like I am, unless it's the bottom two teams. So after a couple of practices, all the guys get you measured.
That's a crazy rule.
Oh, crazy. Crazier part is they said, Brian, don't drink anything. Don't eat anything. We need you to be under 6'11", because if you're above 6'11", you can't be on our team. They take me to this, this hospital area. They put me down on a table, and then everybody else had like a manager from the teams come to this height measurement. So I'm in my underwear and that's it, which I don't know how that affects my height. I still haven't figured that out, but they got me stripped down in my underwear and I got all the other teams' managers there while they're measuring how tall I am. Like, it was just like, what in the world am I doing to get a paycheck? Like, it was nuts. So that was crazy. Like I said, then I go and I'm playing really well and they bring Darnell Jackson in. Now, I hear that he's coming in. Jared tells me about this. That night, I go for 40 and 31.
Wow.
Okay. We win. I go to management, and I very blunt said, I know you're bringing somebody in. You know, after 40, 31, you're feeling good about yourself. You're, all right, I'm going to say what's really on my mind. Like I said, I know you got somebody. I don't want to see him at practice. I don't want to see him at the games. I don't want to see him anywhere. Like, he is nowhere to be where I am, period. Like, if you want to work him out, you do it after our practice. Like, we've got something going here. The next game. Now, I stayed in this apartment complex, the hotel. There's only one place to eat. That's where I always ate. That's what I did. The next game, I get food poisoning. And so I try to play through food poisoning. I end up in the hospital because I'm dehydrated. The next day after I get out of the hospital, the coaches and everyone come to and say, hey, we're going to release you. And like, it doesn't add up to me. Like, cause that's the only one place to eat. Like, it just doesn't add up to me. Like, I firmly believe that something happened to my food, knowing that they tried to get rid of me.
Like that Russian spy ship where they're like poisoning you.
Like, honestly, like, and I know it's crazy to think that, but this is why. They came to me and they said, all right, we're going to let you go, but you can't say anything. You can't put it on Twitter. You can't say anything. We're going to give you an extra $20,000. Not to say why you got released.
Right.
And I'm just like, what? Like, that's where it started to really get fishy for me there. Like, it was a crazy situation. I love the Philippines. The people are great. I love the basketball. I love the situation. It was just crazy. I mean, that was one of the weirder ones where I looked at what just was like, what am I getting into?
All right. So then you come home and then you did one last season in Japan, right?
No, now, I went to Dubai after that.
So what was that like?
My two guard was like 5'11", 260. I mean, the basketball. So they're trying to make an investment and trying to make the game better. And they're doing a better job. The players are getting better. I loved it. I went there with my wife. We practiced at night. We'd run to Starbucks. We'd go to the beach in the morning. We'd get up. We'd work out. We'd stop by Starbucks on the way home. We'd go to the beach. We'd make dinner. I'd go to practice. My wife would hang out. And, like, that was life. And I loved it. We had an American coach, which was Coach Joey. And I'm blanking on his last name right now. But he was there. And, like, they had a guy there. I came in to take his spot. And they had me practice against him one day. And they said, we're going to run with him because they're right in the middle of a cup play. And after one practice, they're like, all right, we might change our mind. You might come in and play like during the rest of the cup, which, again, was a weird situation. But that's how overseas basketball is. Like, you're going to lose your job. Someone's going to take it. And then you're going to take somebody else's job. Like, it's nuts. So, I mean, I love that place. it was great. The basketball wasn't great, but I love, like, Dubai is, I don't know if you've ever been, but like,
I'm not. I'll tell my Dubai trip story really quickly. I was in Russia for the first couple months, and then they have a break, and this is in 2001, and they were getting ready to go to travel to Dubai to train for a couple of weeks, have a couple of weeks off. So they have us bringing our passports. And my passport, I am Jewish, and I've been to Israel a bunch of times, and like, there's no way you'll get in the country.
Really?
And probably in hindsight, I could have. And if I had known that, I could have just gotten a new passport without any Hebrew writing on it. So I had to stay in Perm, Russia, and train twice a day with one coach and in the gym. And they're all in fucking Dubai. That's my Dubai story. Yeah. When did you know it was over?
My last year, I played 2 years in Japan. I played with Toshiba. And then I had another knee injury that I had to get a surgery on when I came back. I was able to play one more year in Fukuoka, won championships with both teams. But I knew at that point when I was in Fukuoka, like, and I don't know if it was for you, but for me, like, the amount of work that I needed to put in just to get on the practice floor, like, my last year in Japan, I would say Monday, because we played back-to-back, so we would play Friday, Saturdays, or Saturday, Sundays. It would be Monday, Tuesday that I would go to the coach. Like, I physically can't practice. Like, it hurts too much. By Wednesday, I was good. Yeah. But, like, my knees, my back, like, it was all just – it was done. Like,
I just wasn't good. That's the difference between you. I just wasn't – I actually my thing, and this is kind of an interesting one that I want to – this is probably about a last deal, is I found that the hardest part was – it's not a team. Like,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't college. Like, there's a couple reasons that guys, everybody thinks like, hey, everybody's going to league. If not, let's go overseas and make a bunch of money. Like, yeah, you're going to a different culture and you're like, it's just another uniform, you know? And do you want, when the game starts, do you want to win? Hell yeah, you want to win. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I remember winning a Russian championship and feeling nothing. I'm like, I feel nothing. You lose a game and if you played well, you're like, well, I played well, you know, like, did my shit. And I'm like the least selfish person on earth, but I hate that. And then I hated when I was in the minor leagues, no matter which one, the only thing somebody could talk about was playing somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right. Man, I got to get here. I got to get there. I got to get paid. I got to, like, nobody, hey, we just won a game. We're down seven. Like, it's just a game. It's just a means to an end. That was the hard part. Okay, so you get done playing, come back from Japan, you're done. Like, how long was it before you ever, like, picked up a basketball and, like, when you decided you were done, did you go through any period of, I need a little space from something because I've done it so much?
Not, I needed a space from working out, from the process of that. As far as the game.
Yeah, I don't want anybody tell me where I got to be and when I got to be.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Like, as far as the game, like, I jumped in and was an assistant coach with the Wisconsin Herd, the Bucks G League team, that next year right away. Like, so the game, like, I love the process.
Yes.
But it was a different process. Like, it was breaking down film. It was studying the game more. It was being able to teach the game without having physically to go out and do it anymore. Like, that for me, like, as far as working out, like, I've worked out occasionally, but it's not like I work out like I used to. Like, and I'm not going to anymore. Like, I'll still do some stuff, but it's like, it's not that. So for me, it's the process of what I loved now with the coaching and diving into it. And that's why, like, I love the being an analyst now on BTN, because it's the same thing. Like, the scouting reports that I put together for the G League team, it's my prep work. Like, it's funny. I told Lana Tucker and Joe Krabnoff this. I had a Wisconsin and Illinois-Chicago game this year. I said, boys, if your whole team got sick, if guard got sick, if you guys got sick, I could give you a scouting report to your team. Because
I'm same thing. You know, I watched the five games before.
Yep.
You know? This is the last one. As a big guy, a scoring big, and as a guy now who runs camps and developmental program, right? Say a big white kid comes into your gym, and, you know, forever we've told kids, like, get your ass down at the block, you know, get position, establish position. Like, how do you decide, how would you, if you could rebuild your game, what would you do when you have a kid who's big early on in their development?
So there's a lot of things, right? But like the one thing that I would focus on more than anything is the footwork, because you can have the footwork be in the post or you can have the footwork be on the perimeter. I remember this to a T. I was 3 years out of college and we were in Milwaukee. Kelvin Sampson was an assistant coach there. I was going against Joe Alexander. And I was trying to get a catch on the elbow. And for the life of me, I tried to battle with him with my whole upper body. Kelvin said, "Butchie, what are you doing? Like, all you have to do is lock your top foot over his top foot right. and you won the battle, right? Like, you don't have to do all this." And I mean, that's 8 years of being a high level, like, and me the first time kind of figuring it out. So for me, with all of the kids that we work with, it all starts with the footwork. It all starts with the base, because that footwork you use in the post is also the footwork you can use on the perimeter to get open. This isn't rocket science. It's hoops. I think at times we need to simplify the game. And then if the player and the kid can show they're good enough to add the next step, we add it. But right now, every trainer in America wants to do five behind the backs, between the legs. And half these kids aren't good enough, Doug. You know that. Like, let's get them to the point where they're good enough and then add it, versus saying, let's do five between the backs and then have them struggle. And now all of a sudden it's just garbage basketball. So for me, it's simple. It's just a simple footwork. Let's start by teaching what a jump. Do you know how many kids that I teach that don't know what a front pivot is versus a reverse pivot? Like, it blows my mind. High school kids don't.
Well, this is, sadly, this is what I'm teaching on a nightly basis. Okay. So these guys are, Jordan Bohannon's coming back for, is it year seven?
Year six.
And then your boy Brad.
Brad Davidson, yo.
Brad Davidson's come back for,
I think he's year five. I think.
Did he redshirt a year? I think he played right away.
I know he had a shoulder, but I don't remember if he redshirted. But I know he had a shoulder. I think
here's the thing. I know J-Bo a little bit, and I know that he's all about name, image, and likeness. Whenever.
Oh, he sure is. I played with his brother, so I know.
I know you did. I mean, the whole family right there, all in that area. But I actually totally get it. Like, if Mike Boynton's like, "Hey, bro, we found out you got another year. You want to hoop?" Like, yes, right? Mm-hmm. If it was you, and knowing what you know now about the true life of a professional basketball player, what do you think about the idea of one more year in college? Now, granted, those guys aren't guys, NBA guys, but they're guys that can make money playing.
Yes.
What do you think of the decision for one more year for those guys?
For those guys, I think it's good. Like, I mean, it's crazy, but like Jordan Bohannon, what is he going to do? Like, he go overseas, make some money for a couple years, and then he'll be done. Brad Davidson, same thing. Like,
plus, they'd be miserable. You can't play at a place like Iowa, Wisconsin, where it's all about like us. You represent your entire state, right? And then all of a sudden, like, you're going to go play in Clermont-Ferrand in France for some coach. It's like, this is a rival. Like, I don't feel that rivalry.
Just you. Like, I told you, like, it took me my first two spots. I got released because I still was in the college mindset. Like, it's completely different. So I'm glad for these guys. Like, go play another year. You're not leaving that much table. You're maybe leaving $50,000 on table. If you get your grad degree, hey, you've made it back. In that. Now, with Jordan, what he wants with name, image, and likeness, like, I don't agree with him on it. Like, I played at the University of Wisconsin, right? How I got into BTN. So I called Coach Alvarez up. We had a meeting. I said, "Coach, I put the work in. This isn't a fit. Like, but I can you help me just get a foot in the door and I'll do the rest?" Just, and that's what happened. Now, that value is more than the name, image, and likeness stuff. Like, that value is way more important. And that's where I get upset with Jordan. It's like, "Jordan, you better see the big picture, man. Because right now, if you ruffle enough feathers, like, they might, that door might not necessarily be open."
Ruffles out feathers. I think it's the part where there's a bunch of parts that we dismiss. We also dismiss how hard it is to get into these schools to begin with, right?
Yes.
Yep. Right? Like, we weren't athletes. There's a lot of, like, I wouldn't have gotten to Notre Dame to begin with. No chance. And then the rest of our lives, you know, you're attached to the school you went to, which that's the curious thing about the transfers is a lot of these guys, like, okay, go back for your alumni. Like, where are you? Where's your alma mater? Right.
Yes.
Like, oh no. I played there 4 years, but I just want to do another year. Like, no, that's not how it is, bro. Like, we may say like, hey man, you go kill it. God's plan, right? Hashtag God's plan.
Yep.
But the reality is like, you're either for us or if you're somebody else. And then if you go and play one season, you're there for 6, 7, 9 months. Like, again, same thing. I think it's a hard thing for these guys are going to figure out.
Yeah, I talked with Richard Pitino about that. He's like, you know, we had a couple of guys. This was 2 years ago, and he's like, you know, it's our graduation day, it's our senior day. But like, he's only been with us for six months. So I mean, like exactly. How's that senior day? Like, it's not senior day. It's not what you've built on. I mean, do I like it? I understand if your coach leaves. Like, I get that. But this year, the whole like what we have this year, I don't think it's good for college basketball. I really don't.
Well, it's because I think, and you and I know the reality of it is like college basketball isn't necessarily popular because of the players. It's because of the schools and the rivalries and the familiarity. And we do everything we can in our power to destroy parts of it, right? Where we, you know, now the leagues aren't the same. So you're not playing like, I don't care how good Rutgers is. It still doesn't feel like the Big Ten to have Rutgers playing Michigan. It just doesn't. You know, Nebraska's got amazing facilities, right? And they do an amazing, they want to be good so bad. But Nebraska against Ohio State is a foot, but in basketball, like it's not a rivalry. Football, it's just because of two sports. But I think it takes away from it. But anyway, well, listen, you've been great. Unbelievable your time. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is fun. Yeah, no, I'm glad you reached out. I'm glad we made it work because it's
yeah. I truthfully think the stuff you guys are doing in Appleton in terms of player development is awesome. And I'm going to try and send a group up so that you can whip them into shape.
Awesome. Awesome. We'd love to have it. I appreciate your time too. I appreciate this. This was fun. And anytime, you know that.
Butchie, how can somebody get the information on your camps and your programs?
Camps. Yeah. Just BrianButchBasketballCamps.com. It's pretty simple. I'm a pretty simple guy. That's all it's gotta be is just BrianButchBasketballCamps.com. And if everyone ever needs to get a hold of me, just, you know, BrianButchBasketball@gmail.com. We'll take care of everything that everybody needs.
By the way, last thing, you should play in Australia because I think Wisconsins and Australians are the same people. Right? Right? They just want to go and kick somebody's ass in basketball and then go have a beer and tell stories about it. Right. Like they're very much very similar. I've never met people from Wisconsin that I don't enjoy hanging out and have a conversation with. I've never met an Australian that I don't enjoy hanging out and have a conversation with. With that, I bid you adieu. Thanks, dude.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks. I appreciate it. We'll see you guys. Thanks.
All right. My thanks to Brian Butch. That was outstanding stuff. Really, I thought you'd like the Russian stories. I have more Russian stories I always share within it. More Israel stories, some France stories I haven't shared either. But I would just tell you this. Like, look, the stories fill your experience up and make it very, very rich. And there are teams you're going to join that if you stay on, I think you'd have a semi-collegiate type of feel with. But I'll also tell you that it can be a very difficult life. It can be a tough life to feel super comfortable living. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Remember, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 through Pacific. Make sure and download these things. There's a bunch of different good ones. Tremaine Folks was last week. He was outstanding. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.